Welcome back to ILTA Voices, your home for all things ILTA.
Good afternoon and welcome everyone to today's 30-minute ILTA podcast entitled Sitting in the Hot Seat 2, Trial and Terror. I'm the moderator, Jill Okerlund, the legal process coordinator for Robinson Bradshaw. And I am really excited to be doing this part two of this podcast. And I'm thrilled that our panelists have returned from part one. And they are Stephanie Mills, Manager of Discovery Services at Castles Brock and Blackwell. We have Tim Paganelli, CEO of the Paganelli Consulting Group, and David Gomez, Practice Support Project Manager at Robinson Bradshaw. So welcome, Stephanie, David, and Tim. And if you want to just give a brief introduction of yourselves, that would be great.
Sure, I'll go first. Thanks, gentlemen. So I'm Stephanie Mills. As Jill has said, I am the manager of discovery services at Castles Brock and Blackwell, and that's in Toronto. Although we do have firms in Alberta and British Columbia as well. I have been doing this for 20 some odd years. And through those years, I've had the privilege to do about 5 trials. They're always exciting. They're always harder when you're in it and you think about them fondly as you look back later on. But it's been a really great experience for me. And I would encourage anyone, if they have the opportunity to do a trial, to embrace it and really have fun with it.
David, go ahead.
All right, Tim. Hi, I'm David Gomez. And as Jill mentioned, I am the project manager here at Robinson Bradshaw. I have been in the litigation support field for about 25 years. And one of the things that I do in terms of my many hats is trials. I love it. I do enjoy it. My number of trials pales in comparison to Tim's, but I've done probably about 100 and 125 in most of the venues that you can think of, whether it's civil, federal, criminal, lesser, but I've done different things and it is enjoyable. I do enjoy it.
Thank you. Thanks for the kind words, David. I'm Tim Paganelli, owner and founder of Paganelli Consulting Group, basically a trial consulting firm doing demonstratives, trial presentation. I guess I'm starting to get embarrassed to say, I think I've been in it this 34 years and have done close to about 280 trials. That includes arbitrations and mediation and those kind of presentations. But as everybody said, it's an interesting field. A lot of fun, can be nerve-wracking at sometimes, but I think on behalf of all of us, we've seen a lot over the years. And so, it's a rewarding field if anybody's thinking about getting into it, because you tap into a lot of facets of the legal profession and see some interesting things. So proud to be here, happy I got invited, and looking forward to this session.
Awesome. Thank you all. And let's just hop right in to our questions. First one, when does trial prep actually start and what does it involve?
Yeah, I think, the trial prep, you can never start soon enough on it, especially with the demonstratives, that creative, innovative process of creating demonstratives that you want for trial, bouncing it between people like us that do the demonstratives or the graphics folks, experts and lawyers. It really can't start soon enough in terms of the preparation for it. Try as we might to encourage the attorneys to start on the process. Everyone knows they're busy and they may be in settlement conferences and so on, but it does, the sooner the better. And the same with the data that we're going to present, the exhibits, what format are they in, and the video. I know during COVID, we all took a lot of Zoom video depositions, and the audio quality wasn't quite there, and the synchronization folks weren't there. So when you're looking at those things, there's problems that come up, and getting handed that days before trial can cause some problems if you have to reformat. So I always say never, it's never too soon to start prepping for the trial, at least talking about it, and then looking at what, if any, graphics exhibits, trial exhibits, video. Having said all that, the average time is about 2 months before we start going to trial, that at least I get words. Now, I know, David, Stephanie, you're in-house. You're privy to those minute orders and trial schedules. As you know, I'm an outside consultant, so we may not get the word even that we're going to be in trial until then, but never too soon. But, you know, it's about 2 months when you really start digging in.
David, 2 months for me makes my heart have a little bit of palpitation. That would be a very hot seat to sit in, Tim.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why sooner the better, but go ahead, Stephanie.
I would make the argument that you start trial prep as soon as you start your discoveries, because you want your evidence to be as clean and authentic as possible. And you want to start putting your best foot forward at that time. Obviously, that's an optimistic view of how trial prep really actually works, but the better and the more often and earlier you can plan for this, the better your success is going to be. So obviously it depends on the specific circumstances. It depends on the complexity of the case. But I would ask you to consider, you know, I have meetings scheduled once a week with the team so that we all know what we're doing. I have an incredible to-do list designating all of the deadlines that we need to meet, along with a formula that tells me how many days I have to meet that deadline. And then I go in every week and say, how are we doing on this? What needs to be done here? How are we doing there? It's a little, maybe a little neurotic, but I think it really keeps us all singing from the same script and it keeps everyone in line. I have a trial that's coming up in a couple of weeks. And we only started, as you know, Tim said, like we only started planning for it maybe at the beginning of January. Whereas I have another trial coming up in December and we're starting now. Like we have started with that schedule. We've started with our weekly meetings. Because when you plan, you get to think about, you know, what is the analysis of our case? How do we need to prepare our witnesses? How are we going to organize our evidence? There's so many things and nuances. Even how do I contact my witness? What is their phone number? It's all of those tiny little things that when you're actually in trial or you're like 2 weeks away, you have trial fog. And so having that organization there will really assist you in staying on point, knowing where your evidence is and knowing how that's going to be presented. The more in advance that you can plan, the better. And, you know, as Tim said, that sometimes is a luxury that you don't have. But again, the sooner that you can do it, the better. And so I would say, you know, 2-3 months that makes me a little bit nervous,
I wish all my clients were like you. You know?
Not the first time I've heard that. No, but I'm also, I think the extreme where, you know, there's lots of things that we're juggling and trial is for me, I have other files. I don't just do trials. And so there's that juggling and that balance that's really necessary in order for me not to lose it at the end of the day, because again, trial is incredibly intense. It's your last kick at the can. And so you want to make sure that you're putting everything in it as soon as you can.
Right. And I'll echo just shortly, because you've all covered the points, and I marvel at having 2 months in notice in terms of what we need to do. And I think the reality is when we talk about it, from an outside perspective, they actually have to make a decision in terms of when they need somebody, but internally we're always here. So I think the calendaring is a bit different. The time scheduling is a little bit different and time management is different. But to your point, Stephanie, when we're doing stuff, I try to make sure I have a calendar in terms of the drop dead dates and anything, particularly when it comes to clipping synchronized transcripts, which is typically the most problematic because our paralegals take care of the exhibits and they know exactly what formatting to get it in. But generally speaking, I have an idea of when I would like stuff, and then there's the reality of when I get it, and I just kind of work within those confines. So for those of you that might be hearing 2 months, 6 months, and things like that, don't freak out if you're not getting stuff literally a few weeks before the start of trial. Because again, the other thing is too, it may settle. And a lot of times the lawyers are focusing on that and not necessarily saying, okay, we've exhausted all possibilities. We are going to go to trial. So we need to start creating basically what we want to use during trial. So keep that in mind, is that we have our perfect idea, and then sometimes reality tries to creep in on us as well.
Awesome. Thank you all for those great answers. The next one. So, do you always do a courtroom visit before a trial? And when you do, what are your objectives for the visit?
I'll jump on that. I don't like surprises in trial because it's just me and I have to make sure that everything runs smoothly. So I do actually visit any courtroom where we have a trial, even if it's the courtroom here that I've been to 2 months ago, just to make sure something hasn't changed. Because to that point, they had changed our video streaming equipment. So I wanted to make sure our stuff worked. And that was like 2 months ago. So I get to know everybody there, the court clerk, the TCA, the bailiffs who may be in the courtroom, because they're going to be your best friends during trial. They can get your equipment in. They can tell you, you know, how security is going to react and what you need to do with security. So I always try to lay that out. To that, I also draw schematics of courtrooms when I go, whenever I go. This is this courtroom schematic that I've done. This was actually in Clarksville, Tennessee. So I flew out to Clarksville, did all the measurements, and then I had to figure out what wiring I needed to bring and things like that because I couldn't go back to the courtroom repeatedly. And this does help me if I have to go back later and review stuff or show this to the judge sometimes. And I always mention this when I set things up in the courtroom. I'm in the judge's house. This is his house. So I have to make sure whatever I'm doing, the judge agrees with. And sometimes visually it's a little bit helpful, a little more helpful so then understand what we're trying to do. So from a courtroom visit, I'm trying to understand the courtroom, understand our needs, and make sure those needs are articulated to the court that they accept that. And in some cases, we may be working in partnership with opposing counsel where we may share the burden of bringing in all the equipment. I want to make sure they're comfortable with what we're doing and they have an idea of what we're doing and they know who's basically in charge of it knows what they're doing as well, because that's kind of important as well.
Those are great tips. And I just think that visit to the courtroom is extremely critical. As an outside consultant, I think of the many trials I've done, I've been in the same courtroom maybe five or six times. So each time it's a different venue, but I always like going in and take a look, but I always like to talk to the court staff and say, somebody else has been in here before me. Certainly. Where did they set up? What worked? And what do you, the court staff, like for us to do? What does the judge like? What does he or she want us to do? What not to do? Where is a tech table set up? You guys tell me. I don't want to reinvent the wheel every time I go in. And so, you know, like David says, though, you've got to go in and test your laptop. The devices you're going to use, not any laptop, with the audio and video, because you'll be surprised that, you know, you think you've got an excellent machine, you get over and all of a sudden it doesn't work. Also, the switching back and forth between your side presenting and your adversary presenting sometimes causes some difficulties. The court system may not be able to adjust from the resolution that you're running on with a graphic card in your laptop compared to the other side. And when they go to an Elmo, and so all those things are in there. People say, how much time do you need? And my clients will look at me and, Tim, you only need what, 15, 20 minutes. It's a plug and play courtroom. We just walk in and put your laptop in. And you're like, no, I need an hour. I might be done in 5 minutes. Fine. I'll sit there for 55 more minutes and continue to test back and forth. And then, you know, and so as David says, the other thing to do is that schematic that he's got so that everybody can say, this is where I'm going to be. Let's get this figured out now. And let's also work with opposing counsel. Just like David mentioned, you know, we don't want to get in there after the setup and somebody says, no, that's where we were supposed to sit or something like that. And so it's imperative that you go. Sometimes be like, well, I could go over and take a look and let you know the layout. If you are going to be in the hot seat, you're going to be the trial technician presentation, you need to go in there. You need to look at what you got so that you've got the layout. I just think it's critical because if your hardware works in the courtroom, this job becomes significantly easier besides the prep we just talked about on the previous question. So it's a critical aspect. Test, and test some more.
Stephanie? I echo those sentiments. It's not a step that you want to overlook. It's something that, again, will decrease the stress. You'll have familiarity with your environment. And as well, you know, making friends with the court staff to the, you know, what is reasonable will greatly assist you should something go awry. You'll be able to depend on those individuals to help you. Where's the closest Staples or where do I find an outlet? they will be able to really help you out. So getting to know them and fostering those relationships will be of great assistance. And to that as well, I don't know about you both, but we're still doing some virtual trials here, or at least even having virtual witnesses pop in at a courtroom. And so I might be jumping the gun to one of the other things we're going to talk about with respect to trial technology. But if you're not visiting a courtroom, but you are doing an online hearing, you need to test your equipment and you need to treat it in the same fashion as you would in-person attendance. So try to keep that in mind and have that for your consideration if you are doing a virtual hearing.
Yeah, no doubt those virtual hearings are witnessed by Zoom or something. Oh, you know, internet connectivity and quality, and no question.
Right. These are all great tips. Thank you. Our next question, the big one. What does a day look like? Well, actually, in trial, when you're in the thick of it, from the prep in the morning to the evening prep for the next day, like what does all of that look like for you all?
I always tell people, and they think I'm kidding, and I'm sure my colleagues here will back me up. It's a 6 a.m. to midnight every day, at least Monday through Thursday. Mine is typically, you know, alarm goes off at 6 a.m. Get up. I usually go straight to the war room to clean up anything that happened overnight. Some nights I tell attorneys, look, I know you're going to be up till 2, 3 in the morning finishing your outline for your witness. I'm certainly doesn't make sense for me to sit here and be up till 3 and wait for your outline to go over it. So I'll get in the war room early, sometimes even earlier than that, especially where I know outlines are coming. So in the war room, clean up everything, pack up all my gear, make my way over to court, get in at least 30 minutes early. And sometimes you don't need it, and sometimes you're scrambling at the last minute. And so I do to go to court, set up and test everything again, audio. Even if you don't think you're going to run something with audio, like a video deposition clip, test it anyway. Things change, witness order change in the middle of court, and they say, oh, we're going to move to the witness. And you're like, go ahead and test the audio. And then during the breaks, court, I'm always going up to the attorneys saying, you know, where are we headed next? Are we still on script? What's going on? Even to the point where I try not to be annoying, but say, look, I want to make sure we're in sync. We're going together. Lunchtime, you know, you're cleaning up what you can, grabbing something to eat, and there's always just some prep going on. And so those are the things that happen. Now, of course, sitting and paying attention and trying to do the two or three things at once that we do while we're operating the laptop during court is essential. You've got to stay focused the entire time, listening to adverse presentation to see, you know, they brought up 7 or 8 exhibits during their exam. I'm going to make notes of those just in case we need to go to them. It wasn't in our outline, but that anticipatory thinking, or while you're listening, they mentioned a deposition that we don't have. They mentioned an expert report, even though expert reports typically aren't in evidence. Anything I can think of while those presentations are going, our adversary presentations, I make notes to saying this may come up, and literally go, crap, it's not loaded into my software yet, in my database. I'm going to load it in just in case. Day ends, pack up everything, make sure everything's set, and then you're back into, you know, quick break, quick meeting. You're back in the war room, and you're starting to prep for the next day of what's going on. It's at that point in the war room where you're just constantly working and prepping, and then I try near the, you know, end of the evening to back up both laptops so that both laptops are identical or up to date at that point, and try to get as much done as I can before, you know, going to bed and starting over the next day. So, Stephanie, what do you think?
That sounds right. I absolutely support that. It's almost that you're operating in almost three or four chunks. You have your before trial, you have at trial, and you have after trial.
That's a
And
good
the
way to put it.
adrenaline is up and down the whole time because you're trying to, again, you're trying to anticipate what the adverse party is saying, all of the exhibits that you might need to refer to. I've often said that I enjoy trial that is out of town, because that is the only thing I'm focusing on for 4 weeks. Whereas if I'm having to then go home and deal with home things, it's very distracting and I don't have the capacity to focus on both. And so I often try, even if, so I'm based in Canada and Toronto, I try to stay over. And so I don't have to come home and deal with personal things that I'm in the trial. It is my life for the next 4 weeks. I'll see you on the weekend. It is very intense. But in the same time, it's so gratifying that you walk away every night and you're like, man, I got so much accomplished today with respect to helping with the script, getting my exhibits sorted. I am ready to go for tomorrow. And the adrenaline then helps you get through those days. So that's, if you can ever just stay like next door to the courthouse, I would sometimes really, I endorse that. It sounds a little bit, again, maybe it's my neuroses coming through, but I just need to have that comfort because it's such an intense experience that you don't want to be distracted with outside needs that you can't really manage at the time.
Yeah. Echo everything that was said, and I'll try to cover some points that I think as well. One of the things I do like the collaborative process that occurs during trial. I'm not just the tech person. I'm a person who can give insight and ideas, not legal opinions, but insight and ideas. And a lot of times I do get brought into trials right before, and I don't know anything about the case because it wasn't my case. I didn't work on it before. So from a layman's standpoint, I can listen to both sides of the arguments. And usually at the end of the day, I can let our attorneys know. It's like, you know, and they'll ask, you know, it's like, well, what do you think? I said, well, they brought up these three points that if I was on the jury, these would be in my head. And, you know, and sometimes they can take that into the mix in terms of when they're questioning witnesses or how they address it. So I do like that part that it's a collaborative team when we do that. One of the other things, and I think we talked about this during our last session, was we're all pretty much single person entities when it comes to trials, and we take care of everything. So there are long days when we put in the new exhibits. And one of the things too that I always do is, even though the attorney day ends, ours somewhat begins, whether it's getting up at 6 a.m. in the morning or staying up until they finish, and I'll get the outlines and I'll make sure I'm going through their outlines, I'm looking at their exhibits, I'm pulling the exhibits up, going to where they're going. And to Tim's point, that you really want it kind of seamless. You want to know where they're going. So when they start talking about a document, you've queued it up. When they want to go to a paragraph, you've called it out, you know, so it's seamless. So they don't necessarily have to stop their flow. Again, you know, we work best in the shadows, even though we're pulling all the strings, but we work best in the shadows to assist the attorney basically move their story forward with the graphics that we may be showing. Mm-hmm. That's it.
That's great. Thank you. All right. We'll get going here to the next one. Trial technology. You know, what does your firm use or your company, and why?
I'll go first, I guess, on that one. We use, for a trial presentation, and that's really kind of the backbone for what we use. Basically, we can, you know, basically graphically pull up documents, call out, zoom in, highlight, and do all that fun stuff, do clips. We're currently using OnQ. We've been using it now for probably about a year and a half. We did use Trial Director before, but Trial Director seems to be lagging in technology and consistency. So we found that OnQ is much better for us in terms of accomplishing what we need to do. And of course, there's also ancillary stuff that you might use. PowerPoint still works good for linear presentations, whether that's opening or closing. To Tim's point, there are some demonstratives, whether we do it digitally or as a board, because there's some benefits to use a board. And we've talked about this before, but for technology, sometimes old school works. From the standpoint here, as an example in North Carolina, attorneys usually have to remain seated while questioning a witness. They can't get up. But if you have a demonstrative where either the witness has to come off from the box to point things out or write on a chart, that adds a little bit more interest, at least for the jury, to watch that action and activity. So kind of a mix of things, and I don't want to necessarily everything, because I'll, you know, let everyone else fill in some stuff, but I find that technology to the nth degree isn't always the best tool. You've got to kind of find the right tool. And I always use the analogy that when I go golfing, I don't golf, but when people go golf, they have a set of clubs, and you pull the right club for the shot that you're currently doing. And that's kind of the same thing here. Assess what's going to provide the best impact for the case at hand.
So I'm just going to jump in really quickly, because primarily my focus is in Ontario. Courts have adopted Case Center, and so we are married to that when we're presenting within the Ontario court system. We do have other technologies in play, as David has mentioned, because there are going to be situations where I'm in an arbitration and Case Center may not be the appropriate tool to use. But primarily that's sort of where I am at the moment. It's better than paper. So, you know, like there's all the, and they do have some functionality, which I quite enjoy. But that's what we're using currently within Ontario.
Yeah. to echo David, what David said, I come at it a little bit different perspective, because sometimes a firm will say, look, we built a database in this particular software. We need your help to go to trial. And so I come in and have to adopt whatever tool they're using. Having worked at the parent company 30 years ago that developed Trial Director back in the early 90s, it was called Trial Link. I again, what David said, the technology that they had was good, innovative, creative in the day. Over the years, I know we all had trouble with some of the video applications with it. I prefer to use OnQ. That tool seems to be a little bit more solid, a little more stable. It has a lot of functionality and features in it. I also encourage everybody to use PowerPoint. And I know people are like, oh, PowerPoint. It's gotten tools that avoid that trip to Illustrator or Photoshop now built in. It's not as elaborate, certainly, but there are a lot of things you could do with it, and even creating simple visuals to make an exhibit to put in to OnQ. But I like David's comments about the golf analogy. Oftentimes using an Elmo with a piece of paper that thought that, wow, there's the real contract. There's the real document he signed. I'm going to set it down and let you look at it instead of an image. Or an easel for an expert to go up and, like I always say, teach the class, like you're in court and, you know, you're using that sort of strategy to work with the jury. And so, but the technology has changed quite a bit, allowing you to do a lot more things with it. There are 3D animation tools out there now that are easy and cheap and allow you to do some of the basic things pretty easily. And so because that technology's changed, it's amazing. The one thing that I'm starting to look at from a research in terms of what technology is, what could AI do? And I know that's a controversial topic, and I've started to do a project where I fed in an expert's report to AI and said, you create the graphics, see what you come up with. And then I have my set of graphics that I want to see man versus machine and see what happens. And so, but that technology is, interesting. So anyway, I'll pass it over.
Great. Thank you. All right. And this, I guess I could say we saved the best for last. I'm looking forward to the answers to this question. What is your most memorable story from the hot seat?
Do you want to go first?
Okay. I have a funny story. So we normally do civil trials, but I was involved in one criminal trial, was probably the biggest trial that I was involved in. And that was a John Edwards trial with the U.S. government. And this was probably about 10 years ago. But this picture back here, and I'm not sure how clear it is basically a courtroom drawing from that. And the picture actually has me in it. And if I turn back, you'll notice that the back of my head is captured uncannily by the courtroom reporter. Now, he was sitting behind me for the entire trial, and we opened up a rapport, and I said, you know, there are not many times that I'm going to be in a courtroom drawing, at least, you know, at least from this side, and hopefully not the other side as well. But so I asked him, I said, well, how much does something like that cost to, you know, get a copy? And he told me it's like $375 frame. So I said, oh, you know, the only time I'm really going to have this. So I went ahead and got it. A few months later, I was talking to one of the attorneys that was also at the trial, had asked the same courtroom sketch artist how much it would cost to get a copy, and he quoted her $1,200. So obviously there are scaling discounts for some of this stuff, but I got a really nice picture, and she didn't end up buying it, but I did. So that's kind of my funny story with that. So I do have a nice memory piece from the John Edwards trial.
That's fantastic. That's so good. I don't have one that's as good as yours. So good thing I'm in the middle of both of you, because I'm sure with all of your experience, you have a lot better stories than I do. Mostly mine was that I was at a trial where we were using Case Center, and I was in the hot seat presenting my evidence, and it was going really, really well. You know, there's obviously a hiccup there here or there, but I was able to pivot and fix it, and it was fine. When the adverse party got up to do the same type of presenting, they struggled, and it was a very slow day that first day. And during the second day when they were presenting, it continued to be quite a slow day because they were struggling with the material, so much so that on the lunch break, the judge said, "I can't take this anymore. Miss Mills, can you please be the navigator for the adverse party? And can you present their material for them?" And I thought, yes, I'm in your hands, Your Honor. I'm happy to do that for you. But, you know, opposing counsel, are you fine? And they let it happen, which was fine. And, you know, it was just more of, I had to really be on the ball because I had no script. I had no idea where they were going with their arguments. I could figure it out, but it was quite a stressful couple of days when I was doing that, just to make sure that I could still make it as smooth as possible. And luckily it went well and they were very grateful at the end of the day. But that was an interesting moment, to say the least.
Yeah. And you know, Stephanie, that's a good story because that is one of the things in the, you know, going back to our previous questions, I talked with attorneys on and say, listen, if anyone asks me to do anything, you know, I listen to three people in court, you know, you, the lead attorney, the judge and God, and not necessarily in that order. And so prepping for that to say, I'm going to look to you. And if you want me to do it, I will. And of course, if the judge says it, sorry, I've got to bypass the attorney, but no, that's a good story. I have several memorable moments over the years, but the one that just is one of those things where you want the presentation to go well and then you don't. It had to do with the name of the case was Terry Bollea versus Gawker, and it was the Hulk Hogan. It was a explicit tape that was taken and was released, and Hulk Hogan was suing Gawker for defamation for releasing the writing an editorial on it. And as such, it had to do with explicit material, and I had to present in court audio clips of Hulk Hogan's interview on Howard Stern, which, as you can imagine, was extremely explicit, and sites that I had to blur because they were explicit of that industry, the adult movie industry. And I'm trying to avoid the words, not to say the wrong words, but it's like you're sitting there and CNN was doing a everyday online broadcast. So you could tap in and watch this trial online on their online, wasn't on the CNN regular, but it was still every single day. So I'm like, is this the day that I really want my technology not to work? or is this the day that I did? And so I'm like, oh God, let's take a listen to exhibit 10. And I hit it and just kind of like put my head down like, oh my God. And you know, the interview goes and it deals with all these explicit things. And then let's take a look at this. And I have to bring this out. And I had to work to obviously blur everything out for the jury for some of the explicit material, but that was one where when I got done, I'm like, oh my God, what did I just do? it was an interesting case and, definitely one where I'm like, wow. And had to clean my laptop out completely after that.
That's funny.
That's great. Those were all really good stories. And with that, I just want to thank you all for doing this again. Stephanie and Tim and David, for taking the time and sharing your expertise. And we hope that the audience soon will be able to view this and enjoy it. Like and comment on the recording, please. And subscribe to ILTA YouTube and ILTA Voices for some more great content. So thank you and have a great day, everybody.
You too. Bye. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.